Hey everyone, this podcast is part of Story Mode, the podcast network of Gamefully Unemployed. You can support us and gain access to other great exclusive podcasts at patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. That's patreon.com/GAMEFULLY unemployed, which is spelled like it sounds.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, everyone.
My name is David Bell.
My name is Tom Ryman.
And we just watched Quigley Down Under.
Quigley Down Underneath the Equator.
Yes, the first installment of the beloved Quigley series.
Of the Quigley franchise. Too Quigley, too under. My God.
And knocks me out of my own house.
Don't worry, Roy. Everything's gonna turn out just fine. Sorry, Roy.
My name ain't Roy. It's Matthew. Quigley.
Matthew Quigley is really beginning to annoy me.
Tom Selleck, Laura San Giacomo, Alan Rickman. From the director of the Emmy Award-winning Lonesome Dove, Quigley, Down Under.
So it's Thursday. This is a We Just Watched Classic, which means it was brought to you by one of our patron subscribers. In this case, it was Andrew McGuire.
Woohoo!
Andrew McGuire, thank you. Thank you for bringing us Quigley Down Under, a movie
yes.
I had never seen.
Quigley Down Under is a movie that I watched several times as a kid, but I have not seen since George H.W. Bush was president.
Sure. So we got a fun dynamic here.
Mm-hmm.
This is my first time as an adult. I have no nostalgia for it. Mm-hmm. This is your first time with that nostalgia as an adult as well. What did you think of it in this viewing?
I thought this movie was pretty good. Honestly.
Okay. I didn't hate it.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I thought this movie was just okay. I think there's a few factors into this. One, I'm not a Tom Selleck fan. Not really.
Sure.
And so I didn't find him to have any charisma.
Well, he just has this natural Tom Selleck charisma.
Yeah.
It's a guy that walks into a room and it's like, listen, I'm going to have sex with something.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. Even if it's a lady who smothered her baby.
Yep.
And I think because of that, because it's not a ripoff of Indiana Jones, but it clearly is like trying to become an adventure franchise the same way Indiana Jones was.
I didn't get that at all.
Really?
No, because this movie, I didn't get any adventure elements from this film.
Well, no, it's
this movie
feels
it's
called Quigley Down Under, which immediately makes me feel like it's trying to be an Indiana Jones. And then the fact there's a couple of scenes that at least just one scene that reminded me of it. I couldn't get those movies out of my mind. I shouldn't assume the motivation of them.
This is very firmly a Western.
Yes, but I think it was trying to do for Westerns what Indiana Jones did for Indiana Jones is doing, the serials.
It definitely subverts a lot of things in Westerns.
Right.
And it's not as dated as I feared it would be, which is nice.
Oh, no, yeah. Yeah, it's not that dated. That's the thing. This movie isn't hurting anybody, which is why I'm not mad at it.
No, I think
oh, sorry.
Like, I was going to say, in terms of white savior films, because this movie is kind of technically a white savior film.
Yeah, so is Indiana Jones.
Right, but it's very, very light.
Yeah.
Like, it's more like Quigley, rather than being like a savior, he's just like a guy that recognizes that indigenous people are people with their own cultures.
Yeah. Like, and I enjoyed, my favorite scene, I think, is when he's taken in by the tribe and he's teaching them stuff and they're teaching him stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like, because it really seemed like they used real indigenous people for this.
100%, yeah.
Okay. It seemed like those scenes were just Tom Selleck having fun with them.
Yeah, possibly.
And I was like, that's delightful. I want a documentary of Tom Selleck hanging out with indigenous cultures, learning things from them.
Yeah, learning how to throw a spear and learning how to like find water in the ground.
Yeah, that was great. But like, I think what it came down to is that maybe it's just that I'm not a big fan of Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like it was going to be like an action adventure film. They give him two save the cat moments in a row when he gets off.
I think that's just to establish that he's a good guy. This is so solidly a Western. Like, I'm confused that you ever got an adventure vibe.
Well, why isn't it a Western? Why can't a Western be an adventure film?
Westerns are very specific. Westerns aren't just about the setting. It's about.
No, it's definitely a Western.
Yeah,
I'm saying that it felt like it was going to push Western adventure on me because it didn't feel like it was that gritty necessarily.
It felt like it was trying to
be a broader fun for the whole family
kind
film.
Of it felt a lot like the Outlaw Josie Wales. It got real into like I didn't expect this movie like I said I watched this movie a lot as a kid. But I don't really have any memories of it. I remembered the final scene, like the final shootout with Alan Rickman. But sure. Other than that, I didn't remember anything. So I was surprised to see that it gets immediately into like the racism and injustice.
Right.
And this movie is more about like it's more like a Western that subverts Western tropes in the sense that it is a typical Western story of there's an evil rancher who's like. Forcing people out of their lands, but rather than like in the traditional Western story where it's like it's a rancher who's forcing other white people out of their lands, it's about a rancher who's forcing indigenous people out of their lands.
Right. Which Quigley does not like immediately.
He immediately fucking throws Alan Rickman through a window.
He's not good at picking jobs. He came all the way to Australia for a job opening.
Like 3 months on a boat.
Yeah. Then he learns what the job's about and hates it and throws.
It seems like he already suspects it too. So it's like, dude, you spent like 12 weeks on a boat thinking about this job and you knew it wasn't really about killing wild animals. You knew it was about killing indigenous people.
All right.
He's like, well, maybe it's about killing dingoes. No, it isn't.
And Alan Rickman is once again tossed out of a window as he tends to do in movies at this point.
He has several Hans Gruber moments in this film.
Yeah. I guess... putting aside genre, the other issue that never got me into this is that Tom Selleck, Quigley, it almost feels like a vanity piece for Tom Selleck where...
Really?
Well, there's very few moments, and there are some, but there's very few moments where he doesn't have the upper hand at all times. And considering that most of the action sequences are him shooting people from far away, there's not a sense of danger in his character. Like at the end, Alan Rickman just is like, nah, here, take this gun, we're gonna do the shootout. And I'm like, well, he's just gonna shoot them. And then he does, and it's like, okay, like it's a lot of him shooting at people from afar and them running away. And like even the scene where he's dumped in the desert, he gets the best of those guys,
right?
And it's like there wasn't a point where I felt any danger for the character, and it just felt like it was Tom Selleck going from one like scene to the next being like, look how great I am at this.
That's fair. I feel like that's a part of the Western trope subversion because it's like it's every single beat of that is based on like the white man's hubris,
right?
Like it's like, oh, I'm owed this land, and Alan Rickman is really a very fast draw, so he's like, well, I'm the fastest draw. And then Quigley's like, well, I don't like guns. That entire climax.
He doesn't
where
like
it's
revolvers.
Like, right. He doesn't like pistols. He's a long gun guy.
Yeah.
He's like a dude playing like Hitman or like I kept thinking about that every single action scene that breaks out because Quigley's a sharpshooter, so he's basically an assassin. So like every time a fight breaks out, he's trying to like get away from the fight so he can snipe people.
Yeah.
He's a sniper.
He is.
He's a sniper.
I didn't find that interesting because it's like maybe it's the music, it's the tone. Mm-hmm. It just felt like it was like, here we go on an adventure with Quigley. And then it's just him kind of shooting people from far away a lot. And
well, because Quigley occupies the role of like the mercenary that the rancher hires to bring in.
Right.
To control the population. And everything that Alan Rickman knows about Quigley suggests that he should fit that role, which I think is part of the subversion of Western tropes. Like he should be because Alan Rickman's like, well, you guys, like you Americans had a problem with indigenous people and you just killed them all.
Right.
So I just hired a guy who was the best shot. I used like coy language in my hiring, basically in his Craigslist ad, to bring you over to Australia. Like I figured you'd be down with it because you're American. And then he assumes that he's going to be a better draw than Quigley because Quigley doesn't use pistols. It's all about the bad guys assuming a lot of things based on superiority that they haven't necessarily, that they haven't earned. It's just, you know, and I think this whole movie, I think is just a Western subversion.
Yeah, I agree. And I like that idea. For me, it was the scene to scene issues where I was struggling to keep my attention.
Really?
Yeah. Because again, think of this combination is that he's shooting people from afar. He never really struggles. Like you get a sharpshooter character, put him in a situation where he has to fight someone up close, take him out of his element.
Yeah.
That makes it interesting. They don't do that.
No, they don't.
He always has the upper hand. He sets traps and knows exactly where people are going to go. Combine that with the fact that I don't find Tom Selleck all that charismatic in it. He's just sort of grumbling. He has the relationship with the woman that's like, you know, it's this on par with Indiana Jones, I would say.
I actually really like Crazy Cora.
It's a weird arc. Her arc is to learn not to smother a baby. Because later she's going to smother another baby.
True, yeah.
In
but
a cave.
I really thought that
because
character was
interesting. Because he left her there.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Because I don't know, he left her in a cave with a baby and I was like, you're going to get dingoed, and then she did.
It's another Western trope subversion where she's like she's clearly been broken by some kind of trauma and then when she starts telling the story of the trauma, she's like I was in my house and these Indians showed up. So you're like, "Oh, okay, this is going to be like another searchers thing." But it turns out that it was just like a bunch of drunk assholes. Like a bunch of drunk asshole Native Americans are just like, hey, let's like break in this. Nobody's home. Like they didn't think anybody was home. So they just like broke in and like stole a bunch of stuff and drank all their liquor. And when they found her and the kid, they didn't hurt them. They just like left. They were like, oh shit. Okay. There's people here. So they took off, but she was so scared of them that, to silence her baby from crying, to give away their hiding spot, she smothered the baby. Was like again. That's another.
It's a good idea. And
yeah,
then
it's
her husband
Western
was like, "Get on this boat to Australia."
Yeah, like her husband's a real shithead. Like this
husband
yeah,
like
yeah, he buried the baby and just put me on the nearest boat, which happened to be to Australia, and he never turned around. Which was a nice plant and payoff.
Yeah,
because in the final scene, when Quigley leaves her with the German family and rides off to go meet out. Extreme justice to Alan Rickman, and he's riding off. He stops and turns around and looks at her.
He sure does.
Mm-hmm. And it was a nice payoff.
Yeah,
I was
it
like,
was fine.
Like when that happened, I was like, "Okay, movie, all right."
Yeah, I think a lot of these though are this to me feels like bare minimum character development and plot stuff, right? It's paying off characters.
I don't know if it's bare minimum or not anymore because.
Well, not compared to a lot of shitty films that happen now.
Right, like because so many mainstream films are superheated garbage. Like this one strikes me as like, okay, it's deliberately subverting like every single Western trope.
But all right, that's my first question. Is it doing it deliberately? Because this is the director of The Phantom and Crocodile Dundee 2 and Operation Dumbo Drop.
The fact that it's the director of Crocodile Dundee 2 makes a lot of sense, because Crocodile Dundee 2 came out around the same time. It involved Aborigine people and Australia. So I wonder, he must be Australian, or I didn't look into him. He must either be indigenous himself or really care about the rights of indigenous people, because both Crocodile Dundee 2, weirdly, and Quigley Down Under are really about this issue that didn't get addressed in like any other piece of pop culture that I can think of from that time. The only reason I'm aware of it is because I watched Crocodile Dundee 2 100,000 times as a kid.
I would also say this is appropriate that it's the director of The Phantom, because it has a protagonist that I just couldn't get into. I was just like, I'm sorry, Tom Selleck. It's just not working out between us.
You didn't like the Selleck?
Well, there's nothing to him. There's this, again, they gave him such, they gave him two Save the Cat moments at the beginning, where he saves an old person and nails someone in the junk. Then he saves a lady who also nails someone in the junk. And I was like, all right, we're going for ball hits. That's fine. And it felt like they really wanted me to like him immediately without earning it. Where it was just like, look, he's saving people. And I'm like, that's cool. And then he gets in the wagon and he's just like, oh, I have to be back here with the women. And I was like, well, that's not going to help me like him. And then he's sort of a brick wall for a lot of it. Like stuff like when Alan Rickman talks to him and says, you know, this is what we want you to do. They just cut to him getting thrown out the window. And I was thinking like, boy, I'd like to see the conversation that led to that. Like, did he just grab him and throw him out the window? Did he not say anything? And then they're like trying to shoot him and he's just sitting in his chair hanging out. But that's like the turn in the conversation that I would have wanted to see.
Well, it's not necessarily a turn. Like he already doesn't like Alan Rickman.
Yes.
Like when they get to the ranch and Alan Rickman basically sets up, like, two deserters get brought to him because he has an arrangement with the British Army.
Right.
This movie is surprisingly adjacent to The Nightingale.
It's like the same time.
Yeah.
It's maybe like
50
British
years
people.
Ahead of The Nightingale. Yeah. And the two deserters get brought to his ranch, and he essentially sets them up so that he can shoot them. And he shoots them, and like Tom Selleck's he's not digging it. And in their whole conversation, like Alan Rickman's like really like, yeah, I've read all this stuff about Americans. You guys just like kill people, and you're like awesome, and I've got all these problems. And like, he's not having it. Like it's I feel like it's clear in that scene that he's not, that they're not vibing,
but he's just sort of sitting there.
Well, he's sitting there, but he's not accepting his hospitality. Like, he's not accepting the cigars, he's not responding to, like, Alan Rickman tries to impress him with his Colt army revolver and he's not having it. Like, he's rebuffing everything that Alan Rickman tries to do to create common ground between the two of them.
Right.
So
and
I think
he's throwing him out the window.
Right. It's tense the whole time, is my point.
But he's not really talking much, at least from what
he's
I remember.
No, he's not saying. In point of fact, Alan Rickman says, oh, that's the thing I like about Americans. You're people of action, not of words.
Right. And I actually think that hurts my ability to like the character, because at this point, that's why I'm saying he's kind of a brick wall. And
he's just like
I want to see him react to it more.
That's
why my favorite part was him with the Aboriginals, because it felt like it was Tom Selleck legitimately having a good time.
Just
enjoying himself, and he felt like a human. He felt like a person.
That's fair. He's pretty much just like a lawful good D&D character. So it's like, it's kind of boring to watch him interact with the bad guy. But like when they get him with the Aborigines, he's like when they wake up, Crazy Cora is like, oh, what do you think they're going to do to us? He's like, well, I think they already did it. Like, we were dying. Now we're not. They gave us water. Like that scene gives us much more of an insight into him as a person, where he's just like, people are people. I'm not gonna fuck with any, like, every culture is oh, I've lost the word. But like, he's not a person that like looks down on anyone.
Yeah, really. And I think that was the save the cat moment mm-hmm. for me.
It's another. It's like the third. The third or fourth save the cat moment in the movie.
Yes, but I feel like that. Yeah, they. I think they were like worried because that came too late. But that was when he became like a character for me that I wanted to see succeed. But before that moment, I was just kind of, I don't know. He wasn't giving me anything.
Well, there's other aspects that they show.
Did he? Sorry.
Okay.
Oh, no. You can finish your thought. I was
going to say, there's other things that they show that demonstrates him to be sort of, he's a survivalist who understands that ultimately, if you're dead, none of your ideals matter. Because there's a scene where he and Laura San Giacomo, who plays Crazy Cora, are walking through the desert after they've been dumped in the outback by the bad guys, where she collapses, and it's after like it's like a big montage of them trudging through the desert. She takes the bullet bandolier off his arm to carry herself to like lighten his load, and then she collapses in a later part of the montage, and he walks over to her and just takes the bandolier back and starts to walk off, and like he's gonna leave her there,
right?
But then he stops and he's like, oh, all right, I can't do that, so he turns around and picks her back up. So there's like a hint that he's in his I guess outer edges he's a pure survivalist, but like in his core he's still like the lawful good guy. Like he can't leave her there,
right? And I this movie also, and it's a problem that like say Temple of Doom also has, where it's the guy annoyed with the lady who ends up being the lady that he nails and has a relationship with.
Well, he never actually nails her.
No, but they at the end they're like, we're gonna fuck.
That's kind of part of her arc.
And she's really into him, and like he leaves her there and she's like, get me a dress. Like, again, this is an issue that like I think a lot of adventure films at the time have. She has her moment though, blasting dingoes while laughing and singing.
I really liked her character, really liked. Honestly.
Well, I really liked moments of her character.
In terms of serving that trope of the woman in a Western movie who's supposed to end up being the love interest, she really doesn't become the love interest until the last 3 seconds of the film.
I disagree wholeheartedly. It's really? Like halfway through, they do the thing where he's like, you want to go skinny dipping? And it has the whole thing where she's cuddling to him by the fire, and he says,
right,
like,
but she's
you have
still
to know
calling
my name.
Him her dead husband's name.
Or yeah, not but her he's dead like husband, into it. Like, we man. Know at that point it's a romance. Like, we know this is the purpose of these
it
two
can,
characters.
It can go in that direction for sure.
Yeah, I don't think there's a question at that point. Like, no, just knowing movies and stuff, they're setting up a romance. It's a budding romance at that point. Yeah. And then at the end, when they go to the train guy who will fucking shoot you in the middle of the day if you say the wrong name, that train guy means business.
Well, he's trying to collect a huge stack of bills, bro.
Yeah. No, I don't blame him.
For some reward cash.
Jeez, he was ready to fucking plug him right there in the train
just
station.
Just fucking blow the top of his head off in front of all those people at the train station.
But yeah, I think the romance is there. Like, I think it's again, it's Temple
it
of Doom. It's you crazy dame, and like she's like more into him than he's into her.
Temple of Doom is like,
they also have the food.
Temple
part
of Doom
Temple
is
Doom.
More like women be shopping.
Yeah.
And then this movie is more, this person is damaged in a fundamental way.
Women be smothering their babies.
Well, no, it's a person who's broken. It's not specific to gender in this film.
Definitely, here's the thing. She's definitely a way better character than Temple of Doom. 100%. I just think the romance is just as shitty as any other adventure film of this era.
Right, because it is Quigley just sort of being like, well, she's here and she's pretty and she's into me.
Right, and he's more
annoyed
by her.
But I
want to
make sure she knows who I am. And it's that's like the bare minimum. It's like, well, yeah, she may be able to like remember that you told her that was your name, but like she she goes in and out of lucidity so often that it's like...
He really shouldn't start a relationship with her at the end.
No, he really shouldn't, but I still...
But
I
again,
still,
it's a movie.
Right. Apart from that, I still really liked her character. I thought it was a good character.
Oh, no. I think her character, that actress, I wish I remembered her name.
Laura San Giacomo. She was in Just Shoot Me. She was in The Stand.
She is terrific in it. And yeah, I joke that it's the arc of learning not to smother your baby, because it technically is, but obviously there's more depth to that.
It's more about
her,
learning
her
that
performance
she,
really her, makes
it's,
it.
It's learning that she can defend the baby.
Yeah. I think
like
that's,
she smothered the baby because she
Tom
was waiting for her husband to come back to defend them. And then in the sequence when Quigley leaves them to go to town and she's there with the Aborigine baby and the dingoes show up, she starts to smother the baby. And then she realizes, wait, I can defend us.
Right.
And she fucking does.
Yeah, and she does. She shoots the shit out of dingoes, which it's a hard scene to like. Well, no.
You
again,
so?
Her performance is great. Shooting dogs is they're going to kill her.
They're dingoes. Dingoes are wolves.
Yes, but they're adorable.
Well, they're adorable, but they're also dogs that are going to kill them.
Yeah, you notice that the ending credits, instead of the end, it has a big no animals were harmed.
Yes, because they fucking blast a dingo right in its haunch.
Yeah, but if you look at the making of, they don't hurt. They trained a dog to do that, and the horse that gets fallen off. I mean, obviously, it's the 1980s. It was a mechanical horse that they hucked off a cliff.
They sure did. That horse went straight off the cliff. That was a rough scene, by the way.
Oh, yeah, them forcing them off the...
forcing all the Aborigines off the cliff. Like I said aloud to an empty room, I was like, this is fucked.
Yeah, I think what it is... I think I would have liked this movie if they adjusted who the main characters were, because I just didn't care. Tom Selleck didn't have his arc. Was just I'm gonna protect these people.
He's just the good guy, but he subverts every single Western trope, which I appreciated.
Yeah,
and I thought Crazy Cora was an interesting enough character.
Oh yeah, she was great.
That I cared about the, like, he's just like milquetoast good guy. That's fine. He just does the right thing every time, and that's fine. But he does it in a way that like subverts the trope of other Western movies, which I really appreciated.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm just trying to pinpoint why this movie, why I struggled to find interest in this movie, because for example, The Mandalorian is a literal, like, a masked character with no face.
It's also a Western.
It's also a Western. Mm-hmm. He also shoots people from far away. But I think what it is they keep switching the power balance. Indiana Jones is another example where Indiana Jones isn't a particularly charismatic guy.
He never has the upper hand.
Exactly. And that's what I think, that's why we like him. Because he, as a character, he's not that much different than Tom Selleck in this. He's gruff. He's kind of a blank slate. We know but they give him the one thing. He hates snakes. But, like, other than that, he's sort of just a guy in a hat. And so is Quigley. And I think what it is that they thrust Indiana Jones into so many underdog moments that you love to see him get out of it. And I think that's the same with The Mandalorian, is they constantly outnumber him. And I think this would have helped with better action that put him in the situation of the underdog more.
I think that's part of the subversion, honestly.
Yes, but I don't think that... I think that's a bad subversion, then.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. I do like it, though. Like,
sure.
That climax is so good, where, like, Alan Rickman's like, we'll give him a pistol, and we'll get through... I'm like, you don't know that he doesn't know how to sling that pistol.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I kept
maybe
saying,
don't give
like,
him a
oh,
gun,
you dummy.
You asshole.
Yeah, Alan Rickman, you dummy.
Yeah.
What a dummy. Oh, this was the question I was going to ask before. When they get dumped into the desert.
Yeah.
And then Quigley says, like, I have gold. Come get my gold. And then he stabs him. And then he shoots the other guy who's getting away on the wagon.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to the wagon?
It ran off. The horses kept running.
I must have looked away because I was like, surely they didn't they explain that, because the movie's not badly made.
Right. There was a scene where Cora says, my uncle told me when you're walking through the desert, you should sleep during the day and travel at night. And Selleck says, well, we're trying to catch up to these horses, and if we don't get those horses, we're going to die anyway.
Got it. Okay.
So the horses kept running. So that's the reason they plotted on during the day, was to try to catch up to the horses, hopefully.
Right.
And they just never do.
That makes sense.
Yeah. That was the whole reason for shooting a guy that's running away. And then the other sequence when they try to get away. Right. And the second sequence when they swoop in and start killing all the Aborigines, there's a guy that's running away and he tries to shoot him and doesn't get the shot. And then he explains later, it's like, well, then he's going to get back to Alan Rickman,
right,
and tell him where we are, and they're going to send more guys.
Right.
So he never kills out of cruelty. He always gives the bad guys a chance, which is kind of another subversion.
Yeah, he gives them sort of... that dickhead henchman at the end where the old guy is like, no, I don't shoot.
Right,
and then he throws his gun to his friend.
He's like, motherfucker.
Yeah, it's like, you just got me shot.
Yeah.
Speaking of henchmen, we should probably talk about Itty Bitty Ben Mendelsohn.
Mendo.
Itty Bitty Ben. What are you doing in this?
20-year-old Mendo.
I saw his name in the credits. I was like, no fucking way.
My mind was blown clear out the back of my skull. And then when I saw him with his little, it's either a red wig or his hair is dyed red. It's incredible. He plays a little Irishman. My God.
Yeah, it is adorable. It took me a second to recognize him because I was like, no, that can't be with the
hair. Spotted him immediately.
Yeah, I didn't think about how long ago this was made. So I just expected an older person. Mm-hmm. And then that little guy shows up, and I'm like, no, that can't be Mendelsohn.
It sure
it was.
Is.
Little
Ben
Mendelsohn.
Mendelsohn is in this movie.
Yeah, he sure is.
This 30-year-old movie.
What happens? What's his fate?
He's one of the two guys that get shot alongside Alan Rickman in the climax.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. He's O'Flynn. He's a very fast draw. He's the guy that shoots Selleck in the leg.
Okay, yeah, that checks out.
He's a very fast draw.
Yeah. Because all the henchmen, I think it's just because they're all a bunch of white guys in cowboy hats.
Right, yeah, who can say?
And it wasn't like the only reason to pay attention is because one of them's Ben Mendelsohn. The movie doesn't care if you pay attention. It doesn't matter. They're henchmen. It's a Bendel henchman.
Mm-hmm. A Mendo henchman.
Mendo henchman. oh shit, that old lady got blasted in the chest. I'm looking at my notes.
She did.
I also just want to note that horse exploded when it fell off the cliff, right?
Right,
like the end of Tremors. Like, yeah,
just like a sack full of grape juice.
Yeah. Oh no.
Oh yes.
I have to give a shout out to the line, Ben eating like his belly button was rubbing a blister on his backbone.
I also made a note of that.
Okay.
It's a good line. It's a good line.
I'm not sure. I'm still not sure if it is. It is a good line.
It is a good line.
Maybe it's
like
the
folksy
delivery. It took me I had to pause the movie and be like, wait, what did he just fucking say? I think it's so many words that it's a toughie. Like, that's a toughie for delivery. Right? Because he could say, but he's been eating like a little pig. But like that line, I feel like she should have been like, fucking, what did you just say?
It is.
It makes sense. It just takes a second.
It's a lot of syllables.
Yeah.
I think that's why the line begins immediately when it cuts to a new scene.
Yeah.
That we're not looking at the actors. So I think that's why they start the line before the scene really starts.
Yeah, that checks out.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, not a bad line, just a toughie. It's a real toughie. Trying to think about I don't want to compare it to The Phantom, because The Phantom is also a movie. Watching it, I'm just like, this is there's a lot of ideas here.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't hate The Phantom.
I don't hate The Phantom either, but
there's
the Phantom,
some hilarious details that are
The Phantom is clearly poorly written.
Yeah, it's also
I don't think this film is poorly written.
No, I don't think this film is poorly written. I think it could have used better action. I think it
could have been a little shorter.
Yeah, a little shorter. But I just needed a better reason to like Tom Selleck. It kind of came down to that for me, is that like...
Well, here's the realization I had.
Okay.
This film is essentially a chase film. It's a Western chase film.
Sure.
Because within the first 20 minutes, Quigley gets dumped out in the outback.
Right.
So at that point, it's all about him making his way back to Alan Rickman's ranch to deliver justice.
Right.
So I guess they could have trimmed some stuff out. They could have taken more cues from Fury Road, I guess, because Mad Max in that film is similar in the sense that he doesn't do much. He's not much of a character beyond just doing the correct thing.
Right. But that movie is so packed with action that it...
Correct, yeah.
It doesn't matter. This is made in a time where it couldn't be packed with the same type of action.
Yeah, and there's like two or three extended scenes where it's them resting.
Yes.
That relies on the character interactions. And Crazy Cora is amazing. So I always enjoyed getting to see more of her character play out. And it was sort of entertaining to see Selleck play off of her. But I do understand that there's not much to Selleck's character. We don't know anything about him.
Right.
We know he's from Wyoming. That's it.
Yeah. And also, Indiana Jones seems like a good comparison because I'm trying to think of what those... They did stuff like puzzles, which obviously you can't really do in this. They did sidekicks, fun, like comic reliefs who aren't Indiana Jones. Like, this doesn't have much comedy in it. It needs to.
It comes from Cora. But her comedy becomes tragedy once you learn why she's broken.
Yeah, it's you can't really laugh at her. I found her tragic before that just because she's calling him by a different name, so you know she's kind of
right. She's clearly broken, but
yeah,
I really liked her character.
She's a fantastic character.
I liked that they paid that off in a way that wasn't shitty. That wasn't like. I can't find the words right now, but like they paid her off in a way that was very emotionally satisfying. It wasn't shitty. It didn't play on tropes. It like I keep saying, it subverted tropes to pay off her character.
Right.
I really liked this movie more than
sure.
This movie was not at all what I was expecting, even as somebody who watched it a lot as a kid. Like, I just remembered it as like a fun movie that I liked when I was little.
Right. No, I mean, it's not a bad movie.
As like deep as it was. It's kind of deep.
Yeah, it's not a bad movie. I'm not mad at it. It just, I'm trying to figure out why it didn't keep my attention.
I can agree with your central argument that Selleck is kind of dull. Like, the main character's kind of boring.
Yeah, if they had replaced him, like, maybe at the last minute with, like, a Harrison Ford type, I think that really would have paid off.
Just gave him more.
Yeah. Yeah, just gave him more.
He reacts in fun ways.
Yeah.
But, like, he doesn't have much of his own to contribute to the film.
Yeah.
He's very much a blank slate. A lot of this movie plays out like a video game. Where it's like,
yes,
I mentioned earlier where he's like, yeah, like I mentioned earlier, it's video game-ish where he keeps trying to like distance himself from the bad guys so he can snipe them and get like the instant kills.
Right.
But then also like every interaction he has, he just chooses like the standard lawful good guy response to everything he's given. I could have used a little more depth to his character. His character's not particularly deep. And that's the movie's biggest weakness.
Or like just some characters to add that. Like I said, it felt like he was the wrong main character as he stands. He seemed like more like, yeah, if they gave him like two friends and then they had to take care of the baby together.
Yeah, or
like two
I mean,
funny
I think
guys.
You don't even need that. He himself is just underwritten.
Sure. I want to see...
You want to see Three Men and a Baby?
I want to see Tom Selleck. Yeah, taking care of maybe a Ted
Danson. You
want to
see him with Steve Guttenberg and Ted Danson? Throw those motherfuckers in there.
What if they showed up, Tom?
I see what you're doing.
What if they showed up? How beautiful would have that been?
It would have been pretty incredible, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, if like there's like a stranger from afar and like mm-hmm. they meet up and it's Ted Danson, you're like, no way. Mm-hmm. And then another guy shows up, they see a guy getting beat up and they save him and it's Guttenberg.
It's Guttenberg.
And like, what are we going to do with this baby? And like the whole movie just becomes that.
Guttenberg was shredded like a Julian salad at this point in American history, so...
Damn.
Guttenberg would have taken some fucking heads.
Yeah.
In this conflict.
Guttenberg, it would have gotten real dark.
He was jacked. I'm not going to watch Cocoon. He's jacked. It's ridiculous.
God, do I have to watch Cocoon? I haven't seen Cocoon.
You might have to watch Cocoon. It's a good movie. And also, Steve Guttenberg is jacked.
Sure.
Not going to lie.
I don't. Yeah, no, no, no.
I cannot take that away from him.
I'm looking up images, and yes, I can confirm Steve Guttenberg was jacked in Cocoon. Like, unnecessarily so.
He'd fuck some shit up in Quigley Down. Yeah. If you threw him in Quigley Down Under, he'd fucking take some heads.
I'm also seeing images from Cocoon that make me think I really need to see Cocoon.
You absolutely need to see Cocoon.
It's like him with three, like, light aliens. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening in Cocoon? Yep. Gonna have to check out Cocoon at some point.
No, I watched it for today's topic.
Oh, okay.
It's amazing.
Yeah, this looks like a real film.
Mm-hmm. It's like a motion picture directed by Ron Howard.
Yeah. Ron Howard. He could do no wrong. Okay, he can do a little wrong.
The Dilemma.
What's that?
End of sentence. It's the movie with Vince Vaughn and Kevin James. Where
he
Vince
did
Vaughn,
that?
That's a Ron Howard film. Yep.
Jesus Christ, that's grotesque.
Oh yeah.
Wow. Ron. Anyway, the Aboriginals brought a sandstorm with them. I guess they're vaguely magic.
They gave them
the vague spiritual magic, which it didn't. At first, I was like, what's going on? Is there just random Deus Ex sandstorm? And then the Aboriginals show up, and I was like, oh, that's actually a payoff. That doesn't come out of nowhere. That's a payoff.
I guess you could interpret that as like 1,000 Aborigines showing up at once, and that it just moved that much earth.
Sure.
Struck me as like the most white savior moment, where it's like, oh, they're magic. I'm like, no, don't do that. They're not magic. They're just like people.
It's a small adjustment because it's like these little nods of spiritualism, which is like, yeah, maybe they're magic. Mm-hmm. But really, they just show up ready to fuck people up. It's like it's almost the opposite of white savior because they're saving him.
Right.
But to make them magic brings it back to that, which was like, ah, come on.
Yeah.
Come on, movie. It's like two shots. You just clip two shots from this.
Yeah, let's take the sandstorm out.
Yeah, just take the fucking sandstorm out.
Just take the sandstorm out.
I don't know why they thought
that's
the need
another,
to do that.
Even with the sandstorm, as embarrassing as that is, that's another Western subversion, because normally it would be the reverse.
Right.
Where Quigley would show up to save the native people indigenous people. And in this movie, they're like, no, like, you guys are fucked. The British suck.
Right.
This guy's been helping us out. We like him. Fuck off.
He also earned it.
He earned it. Yeah, he earned it. Yeah.
It's not a bad movie. I think there's good writing throughout. I agree with you that it's too long.
The writing is like really good.
Yeah.
Well, it is too long. It is too long.
It feels like where it is, the cliff scene felt like where it was treading water.
I wouldn't cut the cliff scene. I would cut other scenes before that.
Really? Okay. Maybe. It just seems like we already know they're bad.
But the cliff scene is where we get. That's where we're given the most clear. Representation of how. The British view, the indigenous people. Like they just because that's a technique to like
that's true.
Kill livestock.
I think what it is like it's just another
just
scene of him
as animals.
Hiding behind a rock. Like at that point when he kept being like, "Time for action," and he would crawl behind a rock and I'd be like, "Ah, Quigley, get out!"
Well,
from
there's like five
there.
Guys.
Yeah, I know.
He has a Sharps rifle that shoots fucking 45 caliber rounds. Yeah,
yeah.
I'd crash behind a rock.
No,
too.
Of course he would. It just doesn't make for interesting action when his number one technique is to crawl behind a rock and start shooting at people.
Movie.
It feels like it's supposed
to be.
It
is not an action movie.
It's structured like an action movie.
It's
though.
Structured like a Western, David.
And an action. It's then I would say shorten it.
I've been saying that. I agree with you.
Yeah.
This movie should be a little shorter. I wouldn't
and
cut
shorten
that scene.
More sequences where he's hiding behind rocks shooting at guys.
That's fair. But again, that's a subversion.
Yeah, but that was also just extremely repetitive.
True. Yeah.
And that's where I was getting the most bored when he would get behind a rock and start shooting at people. At the end when Alan Rickman, they're waiting for him to come, and then one of their people just drops dead, and they look out on the mountain, and you just can't see anything. And it's just like, come on, Quigley, just come out.
No, I like
just
that.
Come out and start fist fighting them. Do
that,
something.
Like, that scene where like they're all ducking, like they're like crouched down as they move back and forth because they know that they have a fucking sniper that's pinning them down.
Yeah, I think that's more interesting if it's reversed though. If it's the sniper's the bad guy,
right? It's like I had that thought. It's like reverse Enemy at the Gates.
Yeah, because it's like the hero shot is of a mountain, and it's like he's in there somewhere, folks.
Well, they're all douchebags.
Yeah, no, yeah. No, they deserve to get sniped from afar by Tom Selleck.
They sure do.
I'm just saying that, like, in terms of keeping my attention, again, they're the underdogs in that scene. They're the ones, like, it's only
well,
until he gets dragged out of there.
The bad guys are the underdogs in Terminator 2 Judgment Day. The bad guys are the underdogs in Commando.
Well, no, because T-1000 is...
Well, that... Okay, that's true.
The
overdog
over all the dogs.
I retract that one, but I re-emphasize Commando. Like,
well,
it's,
yeah, but the fun of Commando is watching him murder people in hilarious ways.
That's true.
And so, like, I'm not saying that it can't be that. It just... It didn't... There had to be some dynamic that was getting my attention that just wasn't there mm-hmm. in those scenes. Because it just... Like you kind of nailed it with the video game thing. It's how I play video games.
Correct.
Like Assassin's Creed, I hide in the brush and I shoot them from afar. But mm-hmm. that's just not... I don't... Like, I wouldn't want to watch someone do that. I would get bored.
I got some satisfaction watching these terrible assholes... Be terrified of a guy they can't see.
Yeah.
Like, I derived some satisfaction from that.
I can see that.
Particularly after you see them inflict all kind of horribleness
right.
on the indigenous people. Well, it's like, well, fuck you guys. Like, yeah, you have guns? Well, he has a bigger gun that can shoot farther. Fuck you.
Right.
You know? Like.
He's Quigley and he's down under, goddammit.
And he's
damn it.
Down under.
Yeah. Tom Selleck.
Tom Selleck. Couldn't shave his mustache.
Why? Wait. Mm-hmm. Why would he? Why would he shave his mustache?
Well, he wouldn't, but he wasn't allowed to.
Oh, right. I think that's a good decision. Whoever forced him, they're like, no.
Well,
I know it's for like a role.
It's Magna
I know
P.I.
It's,
He's not allowed to shave his mustache.
I know it's for a role, but I like the thought of a producer like, no, man. It's
same,
your best feature.
Same thing for Jason Lee, you know, in his cameo in Clerks 2. He has a full mustache. He wasn't allowed to shave.
Oh, yeah, because his name is Earl at that point.
Yeah, he was on My Name is Earl at that point.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think we've covered this film.
Yeah, I think we've done a comprehensive. I'm glad you really like the movie.
I do, yeah. I was surprised at how much I liked it. Like, I liked it as a kid, but, like, I was surprised at how much I liked it as an adult.
Right.
Like, oh, this is... I feel like it's surprisingly well-written. It tiptoes into white savior territory, but not as bad as like Dances with Wolves, which came out the same year, by the way.
It's not nearly as dated as it could have been. That's for
right.
sure.
And I enjoyed recognizing that it was subverting a lot of Western tropes. It's really smart script.
It's got baby Ben Mendelsohn right there.
It has infantile Ben Mendelsohn.
Answering to Alan Rickman.
Going full Mendo, doing an Irish accent. Yep. Who the fuck would have ever anticipated that?
And Alan Rickman doing whatever his voice does.
He's just being Alan Rickman.
Yeah, he sure is.
He's just Hans Gruber in Australia in this movie.
He stands out like a fucking sore thumb, but I love him, so it doesn't matter.
He's great. He's great.
Yeah, he's always great. Yeah, but he is Hans Gruber. He's just Hans Gruber.
Yeah, he's just Hans Gruber in this film.
In the Outback.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty delightful. Yeah. I think we got this.
No.
Thank you, Andrew McGuire.
Yeah, you've contributed a lot to our network, and we appreciate you, and we appreciate all of our supporters.
We do.
You guys are the best.
Want to be one of our supporters, you go to patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed.
Mm-hmm.
You can become a subscriber. There are tiers where you can, for example, make us watch Quigley Down Under. There are also exclusive podcasts.
You can make us watch it again.
Yeah, or Cocoon. You can make
Dude,
us watch Cocoon.
Make us watch Cocoon. I fucking dare you.
I want to talk to
Dave about Cocoon.
Yes. We also have exclusive podcasts like Tom and Jeff Watch Batman and Fox Mulder is a Maniac.
Accurate.
So check all that out. Make us watch Cocoon.
Yeah. We also have a store, tpublic.com/store/gamefullyunemployed, where we have t-shirts, stickers, mugs, posters, any kind of thing you can imagine. We've got that there, including a recent design by Starlene Hodge, Where's Bane, featuring Sassy Ben Mendelsohn.
Should we do another one where he's got red hair and a cowboy hat and he's saying, "Where's Quigley?"
Probably.
Quigley's behind him with a rifle.
But you can get your print of the sassiest of Ben Mendelsohn's, Looking for Bane, at the store. So check that out.
Check it out.
We appreciate it. And also, please leave us a review wherever you're listening to this, Apple Podcasts or wherever you may be doing it. If you leave us a review, it actually helps us out quite a lot.
It powers us.
Possibly more than checking out the store. Makes us visible, gets us more listeners.
Yeah. And again, it gives us more strength, like physical strength.
Right. It swoles us up.
Yeah. Every time someone leaves a reply, this like light goes into my chest and I go, whoa. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I gained the ability to slap one human's head off.
Mm-hmm. But you got to save it, Tom.
Mm-hmm. I've got it in my holster for when it really matters.
Right. Yeah, it's gonna come one day. Someday there's a head that really needs to be slapped off, and you'll be there.
Really settle an argument, let me tell you.